This is the Hollywood Outsider, weekly movie and TV podcast with a new episode every Thursday. And this week we're going to look at upcoming releases, including Elysium and We're the Millers. We're going to have spoiler-free reviews of The Wolverine, The To-Do List, and Fruitvale Station. And from the outside in topic this week, we're going to talk about our favorite sci-fi films. And apparently, that's debatable. And also the cliches we want them to stop using. Latest movie and TV news, including our own trivia segments. My name is Aaron Peterson. As you can tell, I have a minor cold. With me today are my fellow host, Scott Clark.
Hey, Aaron, how you doing?
Excelente. And Justin McCumber.
Hey, man, what's debatable is what you consider sci-fi, but we'll get to that.
We'll get to that. We are missing Mr. Brian Williams, but we are hoping that he joins us before the end of the show. Apparently, he's very, very busy. The trailer, the tires came off. I don't know what happened. But
they're driving down I-10 and damn possum scared across the road.
Okay, his understudy's on standby, so.
That's true. That's true. Scott's going to try to make shift with that. Well, you'll see. Oh, God. What else is going on? This has been a crazy week.
Yeah?
I'm going to Space City Con.
What is Space City Con? Tell people what that is.
Well, this is the second year they're doing it, and it's one of those sci-fi kind of conventions where it's movies and TV and comic books. It's small now, but you know they're hoping that every year they do, it'll get bigger and bigger. It takes place in Houston, and I went to it last year. I did one little panel, but this year I think I'm doing about six different panels, and then when I'm not doing that, I'll be down in the dealer room with my publisher and one of his other authors trying to sell some books. So if any of our listeners happen to live in the Houston area or within reasonable driving distance to it, I would highly encourage you to come on over and take a look. And if nothing else, head down to the dealer room and, you know, hell, if you find me, let me know you're a hoe.
Do you promise that it's books in the dealer room? Seriously?
Well, there are books, and that's what I'm selling.
Is there weed? Is there any weed?
Oh, God, I wish, bro. I wish. No, I mean, there's books, movies, toys, shirts, you know, most of the things that you would find at any other convention dealing room. Yeah, geek swag. That's where I get most of my wardrobe.
I understand. Pitch Falcons and stuff.
Did you guys see that video of Will Wheaton that posted online today? He was at some convention, and apparently, you know, they were doing a Q&A, and this woman asked him to give some advice to her infant daughter that she had with her.
Uh-huh.
Bear with me, it sounds goofy, but
dirty is what it sounds like.
No.
To you, Aaron, does the infant daughter sound dirty?
Did he touch her on the eyes?
No. Someone recorded like with a cell phone or something, and basically he gave this 4-minute speech on basically to this girl that's going to grow up and see this video in about, you know, I don't know, 10, 12 years or something like that, whenever she gets old enough, about what it's like to be a geek and encouraging her to love things, whether it be nerdy stuff like we like or sports or embroidery or whatever.
Really?
It was just a really sweet video. And he basically said, and also, you know, be a good person, work hard, that kind of thing. It was just a really cool.
Did he finish it with, if you become a talent agent, please hire me because I'm available?
No. But he's like one of the biggest nerds on the planet. And it was just kind of cool to see him. He was talking about, you know, growing up, he was kind of made fun of for liking the things that he did. And basically saying, whatever you like, whether it be any of those things, give it your all, like those in the room have. It was just really cool, and I encourage everybody to check it out.
Yeah, I mean, I can feel for him because, you know, being a 40-year-old guy, when I was back in school, geez, I don't know how much crap I took for, you know, my love of geek stuff, or if I'd bring in a book to read and people would see the cover. It was not an easy time being a geek when I was young. You kids today.
It's cool, man.
You kids today, you don't know how good you got it.
I'm 33 years old and I still get crap for playing video games, even from Aaron.
No, that's not true. You get crap because of your obsession with them. You have Mario underwear on. That's not normal.
I do not have Mario underwear on.
It's Luigi.
He just dropped them off. Seriously. All right, let's go to movie news. Disney and Harvey Weinstein, who most people thought would never, ever rectify their relationship, have partnered up to bring Artemis Fowl, the 12-year-old criminal mastermind, to the big screen. Do you guys think this is going to be the next Harry Potter or Percy Jackson?
I think it's probably closer to maybe a Harry Potter than a Percy Jackson. Now, I should state right off the bat that I have not read the Artemis Fowl books. I've seen them.
Really?
And I am familiar with their existence. But aside from my love of Harry Potter, I haven't really read the gamut of what's available for YA audiences, and it's something that I should probably rectify. I've heard a lot of good things about the Artemis Fowl series, but apparently, you know, Robert De Niro is going to be an executive producer on this one, but the Weinsteins are quite anxious to get this done because Harvey Weinstein said that he had wanted to buy the film rights as soon as someone brought him the book. So he's glad to finally be able to do this. But for, you know, those who don't know what Artemis Fowl is, and I had to kind of brush up on it as well, it follows a young kid. I think he's about 12 years old in the book.
Yeah, he's a millionaire.
Yeah, he's a millionaire. He's a technological kind of a criminal mastermind, but whose father went missing and his mother suffered a nervous breakdown. And so using the skills and the money that he's got, he wants to set himself the task of preserving his family future and finding his father. And to do that, he goes out and in the first book, kidnaps a fairy called Holly Short, who's a part of some leprechaun unit, which apparently stands for Lower Elements Police Captain, you know, winky, winky.
Winky, winky.
And this film was supposed to cover the first two books. And that makes sense when you read those two books are about. The first one is purely about him kidnapping her and then running off with the gold that's meant for her ransom. And then in the second book, he goes to find his father with the aid of some of these people that like a pixie and an elf.
Oh, that sounds very, very reminiscent to this. It would appeal
Harry
to the same
Potter.
Kind of people. Yeah,
I think it sounds like
a mystical creatures, modern day setting. It should be fun. And I'm really kind of curious how they'll cast it.
I think it sounds like a young yet evil Batman.
What?
In a fantasy world.
Yeah,
kind of.
Right.
Yeah, a little bit. A little bit.
Batman.
Well, hopefully he won't go that far, but
Artemis.
Yeah, I mean, it's a 12-year-old character, so there's the kids who are going to be bringing in all their money. But I didn't like the first Percy Jackson movie that much. I'm really not all that excited about the second one, but this one seems a little more tongue-in-cheek and a little more fun, whereas Percy Jackson just seems a little too, I don't know,
but
standard
isn't
fare.
The thing with this that Artemis Fowl, he's always a 12-year-old. Right, he doesn't age in the books. It's not like Harry Potter where it escalated, so they could build a series that way.
That's
I mean,
gonna
it's,
make
it's hard to have a 12-year-old for three movies.
I was going to say it's going to make it difficult.
Yeah,
that I don't know. You know, but then again, the aging of the primary character in YA books, as far as I'm aware, that's not something you usually see. So, you know, I mean, especially like look at the comics you would see in your Sunday paper. Those characters in most of those comics have been that age for forever.
Mm-hmm.
So it's certainly not unheard of that in fiction, especially fiction designed for kids, that the main character stays at a certain age. Harry Potter, I think, broke the mold a little bit. But if any of our listeners are aware of some that maybe did it first or have done it as well, let me know.
Well, but to Aaron's point, I think that makes making a movie about it a little bit more difficult.
Yeah, a little bit. Unless
obviously,
you put Peter Dinklage in it and just give him, like, cake up in the makeup.
I mean, you can't do the Lord of the Rings thing and film all three of them back to back to back because you don't know how well it's going to do until the first
one comes out. Well,
there are eight books. There's eight books.
Yeah.
So that could make things a little dicey.
I mean, they could scare him into not aging. They could do one of those deals. Threaten him. Contractually. There's got to be some way Hollywood's got to be. You don't get to age. Sign here. Well, we'll see what happens. The bigger part of that is Harvey Weinstein separated from Disney years ago, and he had a huge falling out with Disney. I mean, they never thought they were going to work together again because of Miramax, and the fact that they're coming together on this, that's kind of a big deal. If you follow that stuff, it's not interesting to most people listening, but kind of a cool little tidbit.
I wouldn't wear that.
The pilot for the Beverly Hills Cop series that we've talked about before apparently didn't interest the studio enough to take it to a series. But it did get Paramount interested enough to talk to Eddie Murphy about bringing Axel Foley back to the big screen. Now, the series was going to be about his son, and he apparently did a cameo, and he was so good as Axel Foley in the series, they decided, well, you know, the series didn't work, but we should bring him back. So they're developing Beverly Hills Cop 4.
I think it's funny that the studio is saying that the TV series didn't work when they're talking that the pilot itself got good reviews from test audiences.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
So I don't get how that works. How do you go from, it had a really good screening and everybody really liked it, but the studio is no longer interested and nobody else wants to pick it up.
I think it was CBS, so probably they were all 80. Uh-oh. And this skewers a little younger. Like 50.
Skewers when you pierce something.
I'm hungry. I want a skewer of shrimp.
I will say, though, that I think putting this character in the Beverly Hills Cop series back in movie format makes a lot more sense than a TV show.
I agree. He's foul-mouthed.
Yeah. I like the first movie a lot, second and third.
I like the second one. Shake down, break down, take down, you busted. Sorry.
But I guess,
sorry, everyone.
I mean, how old is Eddie Murphy now?
104? I don't know. He's like 50-something.
Yeah,
he looks better than we do, so.
He makes a lot more money than we do, too.
Not anymore.
And also interesting, the writers for this are the same guys that wrote the script for Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, so that actually makes me kind of hopeful for a fourth movie in the series.
I would have been more interested if somebody like FX or AMC would have wanted to do this show. Putting Eddie Murphy or an Eddie Murphy-based property on standard television, that just sounds boring. Because like you said, it's the language, it's the bodiness, that, mm-hmm. and you'd be completely missing that on network television.
Yeah, but you also got to understand, too, that was the 80s, right, when the first one came out?
Mm-hmm.
That was kind of like
swearing, it never goes out of style,
yeah,
my friend.
Yeah, fuck yes it doesn't.
But I mean, God, like that was like back when like Raw and Delirious and stuff first happened, and that was like a big deal because they were raunchy as hell, and that we've kind of overextended ourselves in raunchy factor. Sure, like you said, vulgarity lasts forever, whatever. But I mean,
I think people have just gotten watered down. I mean, obviously PC is a big thing. I mean, now everybody's worried about offending everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You guys keep telling me I need to worry about it more. So I mean, there's obviously people that get offended. I think they all need to stop crying. Honestly, Eddie Murphy, he used to go after people. I mean, he was very on PC. He's very much the Chris Rock of his generation, mm-hmm. for people that don't get it. And he used to be funny as shit. However shit is funny, he was funny as it. And then for some reason, he got into family movies, made a ton of money, decided he cared more about the money.
Then made Norbit.
Yeah, and Pluto Nash and a bunch of other just shit movies. And his career's just fallen down. But I would love to see Retro Eddie. Like, if they make a Beverly Hills Cop and it's PG-13, I have no interest in that.
Yeah,
no.
So, I agree.
To Justin's point, I want it to swear. I want it to be vulgar. I want it to be Axel fucking Foley. And if you can't do it, don't do it. I mean, do you agree with that, Justin? You're kind of, you and I grew up with it.
I'm over here nodding, man. Well, I can't see it.
And that's why I think even putting it something on FX or something like that wouldn't do it justice.
But you can get some language on FX. I mean, you say shit. I mean, just everything but fuck on FX anymore. Yeah. I mean, it's just vulgar as hell.
Yeah. I think you would miss it, though. I really do.
She's like, where's my F word?
Yeah.
And then get a little misty-eyed.
I know you.
Mm, I kind of like the F word, if you haven't noticed. First time listening to the show, I like the F word. Well, some happy news for you Star Wars fans. They had the Star Wars Celebration, which is a big gathering where the Uber nerds gather and...
I want to go.
See what I'm saying? as we actually said a few weeks ago, but they officially announced John Williams will be conducting for Episode 7.
Awesome.
That's to me, the bigger news out of that was that they firmly announced they're going to use a mix of practical and CGI effects. Thank you, God. If there's a God. If you believe in it.
Well, you know, a lot of people decried the overuse of CGI in the prequel trilogy. And,
guilty.
And I could certainly understand it. But what I found interesting when I watched a lot of the supplemental material on those DVDs is that a lot of things that I thought were CGI actually weren't. There was a lot more model work that went into those movies than I think a lot of people actually suspect. But I think it's all the CG that was kind of put around those models and then maybe used to enhance those models that took away from their actual physicality and just made them look like all the rest of the CGI that was around it. But they have always used practical effects and models and things like that in these films. Just, I think Lucas saw CGI as a tool to get across the wonder that he wanted Star Wars to have, and just kind of went overboard, and nobody was
kinda.
strong. Well, I am a lot more forgiving to my father than most people are. So you're not gonna, if you want somebody to sit here and bash Lucas, then you need to
have
somebody
him.
Else handling this. But I think he gets a lot more crap than he deserves, and I think that a lot of people don't realize how much practical effects were in those prequel trilogies. Some of it's just kind of hidden better. What I want to see more of, though, are real sets. And they did have a lot of sets in the film, but always surrounded in these huge, you know, green screen tapestries and walls. I want more of those real sets. I want a lot of things that, you know, they can actually move in and out of, and they're set in real places. Instead
like
of so much green screen, like in these throne rooms and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I think the bigger thing with the complaints on the CG isn't so much in even the original trilogy, but as in the ones where they redid the prequels, like Justin's talking about, but the CG that they put into the original trilogy, the stuff that just stuck out like a sore thumb.
Because you were so used to the old version, and now you got this new one. Like, well, the shitty Jabba the Hutt walking around?
Not even just so much because of it was different from what you were used to, but it just stuck out because there were so much practical effects in those movies. And then you stick in a really fake-looking Jabba, and you stick in little creatures and extra animals and stuff that just weren't there, and it looks like you're putting not putting a fresh coat of paint on an old painting, but you're just sticking a fresh coat
paint
of paint
by numbers over it?
Yeah, and I think that it's going to be really interesting to see where this goes. I'm like Justin said, the sets is a big thing.
I think it's good the way that they're doing it now, because now, and I hate to say it because I don't like when corporations take this shit over, but they need someone that would say no to Lucas, and no one was ever going to tell Lucas no.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't because, you know, he's in a visionary, because obviously, I mean, he made this world. Give the guy credit. But he had no one to say, George, too much. Pull it back a little bit,
right.
Or, you know, and now you've got people, maybe committee is bad, maybe it's not, but at least you won't have that problem on this one. So
one thing though, to be a little concerned about though, is I've heard that Disney has said that most of the filming for this film will be done at their studios in London.
Mm-hmm.
So it does make me worry that, are they going to go to Tunisia to film Tatooine scenes, should there be any? Will they go to any other locations to film stuff? Because even the prequels, they went all over the world filming stuff. There's, you know, this beautiful Naboo scenes that they went to Italy and other locations to shoot at. Are they going to do that in these films? Or are they just going to try and replicate locations? Or are they just going to try and make locations in London look like something else? I don't know. We'll have to see.
Okay, everyone talks about China, how China is the biggest international market now. But apparently, they haven't paid the studios their share of profits for 2012 and 2013. That's how much their winnings got.
So they just up and decided not to pay.
They just
apparently
there's a whole bunch of tax laws, and they're saying that they're trying to find exactly how much we owe you.
Oh wow!
And
you really
went there. Wow!
But they don't even know. So I mean, does that concern you guys? Do you think that's a big deal, or do you obviously they'll straighten it out, but.
I would get, and I'm not big into politics, but I would guess that China's kind of flexing their muscles a little bit, because the U.S. obviously wants to go after that, but they also don't want to hurt any kind of relationship there, because there's a lot of money coming out that they don't want to they want to keep that coming.
it's getting close to billions for them, for overseas.
So they don't want to stir the pot, so to speak, and have China say screw you. We just won't have them here at all.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah.
I look forward to it. I mean,
who do the studios send over to, you know, what kind of leg breakers can you send over there when they're going to bust out a Jet Li on your ass?
Really, both of you guys.
Back up with some nuclear subs.
Scott, they're stereotypes because they have
them. That's right.
On the happy side of financial news, Justin found out that superhero porn parodies are apparently the biggest franchises for porn guys. Just letting you know, fun fact. Had no idea. So if there's any aspiring actors out there having a hard time finding a gig, put on a mask and take off your pants. Congratulations.
Well, to be fair, you have to do it well. I mean, if Axel Braun, who is a well-known porn producer, if he made just your average shitty little porn films, they would not be making the kind of money that they're making for him. But the fact is that he does put together fairly decent casts who can kind of sort of act, but the special effects look okay. The costumes actually look almost as good as what you'd find on your average Hollywood film. But what he really does, and this is something that even the Hollywood movies don't do, is he goes to the real, he speaks to the source of these films, which are the comic books. He doesn't try and reshape the mythology to fit a more normal world or something. He, in his Avengers film, unlike the real quote unquote one that Joss Whedon did.
I like how Justin's making this shit sound legitimate.
In his Avengers, you had the Scarlet Witch and you had Ms. Marvel. And of course, with Iron Man and Thor and whatnot, but you had other characters that had yet to appear, and their conversations are actually kind of relevant to the comic book. So,
really?
You know, damn it, porn.
Well,
now I have
an
excuse.
You're
doing some good.
Honey, I got to watch this for the hoe.
Yeah, it's very deep. It's very,
it's very deep.
I mean, the fact that Hawkeye.
What conversations were true?
Is banging out the Black Widow is beside the point. That would have happened in the Whedon movie, too, if the camera just hadn't pulled away.
God.
I'm sure of it.
Oh, let's go back to Chinese people.
So let's pull out on this one.
Oh.
Boom, boom.
Let's go to Brian's Trailer Park without Brian.
Welcome to Brian's Trailer Park.
All right. As Aaron said, we are without Brian this week, at least for a little while until he shows up. I really wanted to do another Brian accent, but decided against it because the first movie we're going to talk about, I'm really excited about. I don't want to.
Do you
want
to do a Chinese accent?
No.
No, God, your casual racism needs to stop. Let's move on.
The first movie we're going to talk about is Saving Mr. Banks, and it comes out this Christmas. It basically tells the story of the real life story of the author that wrote Mary Poppins. That later became a Disney movie back in the, I don't even know what year that was. What year did that come out? The
60s.
60s. Mm-hmm. And basically she meets Walt Disney, who's played by Tom Hanks and Emma.
Thompson.
Emma Thompson. I almost said Watson. Emma Thompson.
Oh, that movie almost got better right there.
Anyway, apparently there's a lot to that story that I didn't know. I'm assuming a lot of people didn't know that Walt Disney really had to coerce her into making this movie happen. Mm-hmm. This movie.
Well, don't say coerce because that kind of implies a little dirtiness.
Disney blackmailed her.
Okay.
Maybe convinced.
Convinced.
He held her umbrella for ransom.
Anyway.
Well, you know, coerce. You know, kind of leaned over.
Smacked
her. Hand on the knee.
Oh, no. You're being naughty. First, you give me the legitimacy of porn. Now you're doing sexual harassment in the 60s.
Anyway, when I saw that Tom Hanks was going to be doing this role, I thought, oh, okay, I could kind of see that. And then I saw the trailer, and I'm like, man, he really looks like he's playing the part. This is one of those movies that looks like it's going to be Oscar bait, but it's one that I actually want to see, mm-hmm. if that makes sense. What about you, Aaron? Is this one you're excited to see?
It's very saccharine. I mean, it's made for family audiences. The whole thing looks tailor-made to pull at your heartstrings and all that jive, and it worked. I didn't want to like it, but I ended up liking it by the end of it. I'm really interested to see in it. I don't even like Mary Poppins. Supercalifragilistic.
Oh, you shut your face.
Yeah, man.
Sorry. I don't knock it. It's just not my kind of movie. The songs are fun. You can sing
them. The fact that you don't like it is a knock.
It's not my kind of movie. It's a little too sci-fi for me. What?
Get that shit started now.
What I do like about it is the way that they're telling this. I really love behind the scenes movies. I mean, I loved Hitchcock and I love this kind of stuff. So I'm really looking forward to it now that I know more about what it's about, mm-hmm. and that there's a deeper understanding to how Mary Poppins came about. I had, just like Scott, no idea what this is about until I saw the trailer.
Justin, what'd you think?
I think it looks wonderful. I was kind of like you guys, kind of prepared to not like it, to, you know, because it does look like Oscar bait, and it does look like something that can get so sappy so easily and not work, you know, kind of like a trailer we haven't talked about yet for a movie called The Secret Life of Walter Mitty, which to me looks like complete shit. Mm-hmm. It looks like it has got Ben Stiller in it, and I'm sorry, I like Ben Stiller in comedy, but the minute he tries to get earnest, he loses me completely. Tom Hanks, though, he can do earnest, and he can play a role right to the hilt, and it still seem believable and mm-hmm. true and good. So that film, Saving Mr. Banks, looks wonderful. I cannot wait to see it. I love Mary Poppins. When mm-hmm. I was a child, it was one of my one of my favorite of the Disney movies. I don't know how many times I watched it, and as bad as Dick Van Dyke's accent was, it was a fun film, and I really look forward to seeing this one. I think Tom Hanks knocks it out of the park, and Emma Thompson, she looks great too. The whole thing looks fantastic.
And Mary Poppins is one of my wife's all-time favorite movies, and mm-hmm. so she's all over this one, and it comes out on looks like December 20th. So, Justin, why don't you take the next one?
All right, well, the next one we're going to talk about is Gravity. If you're looking for a broad ensemble cast, this film is definitely not going to be for you, because really there are two actors in this one. Directed by Alfonso Cuarón, this one's about a medical engineer and an astronaut who work together to survive after an accident leaves them adrift in space. The cast is total of Sandra Bullock and George Clooney, other than a couple of NASA voices that you're going to hear. Those are the only two people on screen. So, yeah. And it looks like, I don't know if it's a spoiler, but judging by the trailer, it looks like Sandra Bullock is going to be the one we're going to be following for most of the film. So it looks dark. It looks kind of a little bit scary. Somebody called it, what was that movie, the shark film? Or two
Open
people
Water.
Were, yeah, they yeah. called it Open Water in space. And yeah, it looks kind of appropriate. What do you guys think, Scotty?
Well, Open Water was a really enjoyable film for that aspect of the isolation, that kind of thing. But what this movie has different, Open Water, you actually had the setup. You had them on a boat with a bunch of people, and then and so you had mm-hmm. some interaction with the beginning. Like Justin said, this one has just them for the entire movie. The new trailer that came out recently makes it look really intense. The action sequences look scary, genuinely scary. George Clooney, I'm fine with. I don't know if I buy Sandra Bullock as an astronaut.
I buy her as a scientist much more than I would Charlie Sheen's ex-wife when
Christmas
she played
Jones.
Christmas nuclear
Christmas
scientist.
Jones. She giggled when she said it. I'm a nuclear heat scientist. Look at me in a bikini.
I don't think you're supposed to take that movie seriously, though.
No,
good, that's true.
Good.
I don't know, Sandra Bullock. It's her voice that I don't. It's like I don't like her voice that much, and we're going to be hearing her talk a lot. And since she's in an astronaut's suit, you're not going to really get to see her much. And so I don't know how ready I am to just hear her talking a lot. But I don't know.
On the flip side, I could hear George Clooney. I don't care if it makes me gay. I could hear George Clooney talk all day long.
Read the phone book.
He soothes me.
Yeah.
Well, he's pillow talk from George would do you good.
I was lost in space like she is, just floating around, twirling. I would love to hear his voice. I'd be like, aw.
It's like, George, talk me to death.
Yeah, talk me to death.
As I die of asphyxiation.
I thought the concept of this is really interesting. Because, you know, in open water, you know that they have a chance. If a boat comes by, they find shore, they swim to shore, something like that. They have a few more outs than they do in the middle of nowhere.
There's no shore
yeah,
in space.
There's nowhere to swim to. Where are they going to go? They can't just like, well, maybe I'll get lucky and fall to Earth. You know, they got nothing going on. So
Earth.
Plus, they have limited oxygen. I mean, there's a lot of things going on. I really love the concept. I have no idea how it's going to play out other than, oh, shit, she's gone. But
yeah, ain't Bruce Willis saving this one.
Have they said how long this movie is?
It's actually 90 minutes, and it comes out on October 4th.
Excellent.
All right. Well, if you guys want to watch these trailers, you can head out to our website, www.thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can watch these trailers. You can read show notes. All the recent episodes are up there. If you have another thought or a topic, an idea, you can send those to us as well. If you'd like to get an I'm a Ho t-shirt, those are available at the website. Reach us at Twitter at @H_Outsider. You can like us on Facebook.com/TheHollywoodOutsider or leave us a message or text at 818-81-IMAHO. That's 818-814-6246. Or email us at feedback@TheHollywoodOutsider.com.
Nicely done. I wish Brian did it that smooth. Just
kidding. Don't be that guy.
Just kidding.
Don't be that asshole.
He's not listening anyway.
Yeah, he doesn't listen anyway. All right, let's go to the big screen where we're talking about the latest reviews. We were going to review Europa Report. That's not going to happen because we're missing Brian. So we'll review that as soon as we get him back on the show. The Wolverine. That's the big one. The Wolverine. Justin, what is The Wolverine about?
Well, The Wolverine, unlike the previous Wolverine-only movie, this one is not an origin film. This one, in fact, takes place after Wolverine 3. X-Men 3, The Last Stand. Of course, this is directed by James Mangold, starring Hugh Jackman, as it all the Wolverine movies do. And with a lot of Japanese actors whose names I am so afraid that I would horribly massacre that I don't even know if I can bring myself to try and say them.
Yukios. Ria Fukushima.
Yeah, there's Tao Okamoto. And I don't say this, unlike Aaron, who likes to piss off every ethnicity, I don't say this to hurt anybody. These names are just hard to pronounce, and I don't want to fuck them up. But the film is about Hugh Jackman's Wolverine has distanced himself from the world after the death of, or actually his killing of Jean Grey in the X-Men 3 film. Spoiler alert on that. He's decided to leave humanity behind, go off into the woods, and just live a life of solitude where he won't hurt anyone else. Unfortunately, his past will not let him rest on his laurels out there in the big woods. Quickly, he's taken off to Japan to say goodbye to a man that he once saved long ago. And of course, a lot of shit erupts after that. Guys, this is probably the last. Well, I can say it's the last of the big summer films, but it's certainly heading off into the sunset of summer. Do you guys feel like this movie's story gave you enough to head off until next summer comes around? Did you guys think that his trip to Japan was worth a whole new movie?
I really did like the darker element that this movie had as opposed to the last Wolverine movie, which I still liked. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that. I liked it, but this really...
Yeah, people try to hide in shame. They're like, no, I'm ashamed that I... No, I'm not ashamed of it. That was like, it was a fun movie. It wasn't smart, but it was fun.
It was, I mean,
except for the Deadpool shit.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Apparently, from
which was the whole ending.
Shh. Gotcha. The story itself, for me, was a little bit long and drawn out. And it's not from the aspect of, like, I just want to see nothing but action in this movie, but it just plotted a little bit for me. But I still really liked it. I liked the direction that it went. I liked that the whole concept of him losing his healing ability was not done the way that you thought it was going to from the trailer.
I thought that was really brilliant.
That. Like, because when you watch the trailer, like, oh, I kind of know that. Okay, I see that's what's going to happen. And then it just kind of totally sidelines that. I really like that. The love story.
Mm-hmm. Between him and Mariko?
Correct. I believe that...
Mariko.
No, it's Mariko.
Mariko.
Is it?
Mm-hmm. I know that one.
So. I understand that there is...
I just disagree with you on like a knee-jerk reaction.
I know.
I understand that love story actually had a place in this, mm-hmm. further than just guy and girl falling, you know, we got to have a love story in there to make the ladies happy or something, but it still felt distracting to me. It just like, really, we just got to, like, I understand the point behind it, but it felt too much. Obviously, you disagree.
I disagree just because I read the comic, so I mean, okay. That was relevant in the comic. Really love the Dark Knight style approach, and mm-hmm. I want to preface that I'm not saying it's as good as the Dark Knight, because mm-hmm. somebody asked me, well, it's as good as it? No, it's not. But the way that they approach it, you know, most Marvel movies, you can tell that they're Marvel movies. X-Men, Iron Man, Avengers, all that, they're real glossy, they're real flashy, there's a lot more going on. They're completely different. They don't seem like they're in the real world. They seem like they're in a heightened reality. Mm-hmm. And I think they really brought it down for this movie and set it in a real world. Where for most of the movie, up until probably the last 20 minutes, when, you know, whatever happens in the last 20 minutes, it really felt like this Wolverine could be in real Japan right now.
Right.
Like, he could be there right now as we're doing this review. So that, to me, I love that. Because, to me, it hasn't been done in the Marvel Universe yet. So I really like that. Love the more low-key approach for most of the film, the direction and humanity they took Wolverine on, or Logan on. I didn't love the changing of the Silver Samurai, which, you know, they do mention in all the show notes that it's in there. But they changed the character from the comic. I like the comic version better. Mm-hmm. It's fine here, but it's not what I wanted. But the movie won me over enough not to care, honestly. The story, I love the story. I love the romance between him and Mariko. I think it works. I really love how they introduce Yukio and how she becomes kind of his, not so much sidekick, but right hand throughout the course of the film. I loved it.
Well, mm-hmm. she is kind of his Robin, mm-hmm. a little bit in this film. But I like the romance, and I like the way that they handle their relationship. What I felt was lacking is how they fell in love so quickly. I really didn't see anything that made me believe that he would fall for her so quickly. And it did seem like he, you know, of course he has to fall in love with her because that's part of the story and it's from the comics. But what was it about her that made him fall so fast? Like, I kind of understand why she did, given how often he was saving her and how hard he was fighting for her. Her feelings for him came slower. And his were so fast, though, that I was kind of like, God, she's not, why?
The the lifetime of her hearing stories about him, I got completely why she would
be
an Amazon.
But be that as it may, I love that they went to Japan. None of the Marvel movies so far have done that. It brought in a whole new feel and vibe. I thought it was enjoyable. I really liked his reasoning for leaving humanity. I understood why he would go to Japan and then why he would fight for this, you know, for this innocent person who's been put in danger. All in all, I thought the story really worked, but, you know, we didn't go to see Wolverine because we wanted a great story. We went because Hugh fucking Jackman. So let's get into the acting. This is Jackman's sixth time to play Wolverine in a film. Is the old man still up to snuff, or is the age catching up with him? And then, of course, Mariko, Yukio, and all those characters. Do you feel like the actors behind them were doing a pretty good job too, Aaron?
You mean Mariko and Yukio?
What the fuck ever.
Look, I do want to say one thing, because I've talked to a lot of people about the movie since I saw it. And if I hear one more fanboy tell me how different his Wolverine is from the comic, I'm going to explode. I don't care. I really don't. It's one of those things where when an actor does a character so well that he just becomes the character, it doesn't matter what was on the comic. He changed it and he made it his own because he owns that fucking character. Just like Robert Downey Jr. did with Tony Stark, Hugh Jackman is Logan. He's one of the very few comic book characters I don't want to see replaced anytime soon. Mm-hmm. I just think he nails it. He knows what he's doing. He is the guy. When I start thinking of Wolverine, even when I look at the comic now, I think Hugh Jackman. And I think I should go to the gym because that that fucker pumps iron.
There were seriously some scenes where he's running around with his shirt off where even I was going, damn.
No, like most of the scenes in this movie, he is without a shirt.
Yes.
But he acts more often without it than with it, much to my wife's delight.
I saw it a second time, and I was just paying attention to that, and you are absolutely right. He is without a shirt or almost without a shirt more than he is with one.
But, and if I looked like that, I would be walking around without a shirt either. I wouldn't have a shirt in my wardrobe.
And he's not like overly pumped up like Arnold Schwarzenegger back in the 80s, that kind of stuff. It's not like too much. He's just a solid
just
chunk
perfect.
Of muscle. Yeah.
Just perfect.
It's the veins in this movie that do half the acting.
Yeah. And I thought the other acting, the girl that plays, and I'm not going to try the names either because you know I'll get them wrong. But the girl who plays Mariko, she's good. I don't think she's great, kind of where you're coming from. I thought she did a fine job, and she's a very sweet girl. She did a very fine job. But the girl that plays Yukio, Fukushima.
Rilo Fukushima?
Yeah. She was great. Loved her.
Yeah, she was fantastic. And this is her first film. I think she used to be a model or something, but she did a bang-up job.
Yeah, she's the one character, man, you could spin off, and I would go see it in a heartbeat. Or I would love to see her in future Wolverine movies as Robin.
Right. You know who I didn't like? Was the and I'm gonna destroy her name, but the Russian girl that played Viper,
Svetlana Kodchinkova.
I'm not gonna try it, but Viper.
She felt like she was acting.
She was, and that mole
acting hot.
Except for the mole. Did you notice that giant mole?
Yeah.
I kept thinking it was Uncle Buck.
Like
I kept thinking of Uncle Buck the whole time I'm watching it. Like, here's a quarter. Go find a rat.
Normally I hate those things, but I didn't notice it. I might have been looking at other stuff. I don't know. All right, guys. Well, what about the production quality on this film? I mean, it is the sixth time we've seen Wolverine. It's been a long time since the first X-Men movie. Do you feel like the directing, the special effects, the sets and all that, were they up to snuff? Were you really satisfied?
I thought this is the best-looking Wolverine movie to date. Like Aaron said, the darkness of this. And again, I didn't
Are you including the X-Men movies? Because those would be...
Yeah, I think this looks better than the X-Men movies. Again, those like you mentioned earlier have that. I don't want to say polished to make it sound like this movie isn't polished, but they have that glossy,
Look
shiny. To it that make it look like you're looking at a comic book or something. This felt grittier, and I really like that, like the Dark Knight effect, so to speak. The action sequences I thought looked great, and I was kind of worried about that, especially like the train sequence in the trailer looked like that was going to be
that
really...
is easily my favorite action sequence of the year.
And it was just the right length. It wasn't drawn out too long.
It's like 5 minutes, if that.
Yeah, I really dug that. I'm assuming you agree with me on everything else.
Yeah, the one thing about the bullet train scene, because that was the one scene I saw in the trailer, and I'm like, God, that looks so fucking cheesy. So cheesy. And every time I would think about it or I see it on the trailer, I didn't want to see that scene because I'm like, that's going to ruin the movie for mm-hmm. me. Because I've seen so many, if you've seen 8 Bond movies, you've seen 14 train chases. Mm-hmm. I've seen the guys get on top of the train a million times. The idea of it bored me. To see it and see how they do it, and it's on a bullet train, and how he uses speed and gravity and everything. Oh, man, it was intense. I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
Now, you saw it in 3D, you said, right?
Yeah, I didn't. I saw it in standard. You don't need to see it in 3D. Okay. It's just not one that needs to be seen in 3D. As far as the rest of production, James Mangold was the right choice because he emphasized character over the action and the special effects and everything else. The ending got a little too close to the Marvel stuff that I was glad wasn't in this one. Mm-hmm. But overall, and it should end a little smaller in scale, but overall, I loved it.
All in all, I liked the film's look. I liked all that we saw of Japan. I loved the bullet train. That was a really interesting scene. Kind of like you, we've seen trains done a million times. But Bond ain't standing on top of no train going 200, 300 miles an hour. Mm-mm. Wolverine can, and that's what really made it special. All the fight scenes I thought were really well done. The only thing that I regret, or I wish they had done, Wolverine's power, his weapon are claws. And he is slicing and dicing like a motherfucker, but you never see any blood.
Yeah.
Or hardly ever. You should see blood. You should see limbs flying off of these people. As much as he swings those fists around and people are dying, I really never got a sense that it was those claws really doing it. And you know, I'm not a fan of torture porn or gore, but damn it, when your weapon are these six of them, massive claws, you need a little of that. And I wish they had pushed it a little more with that. But all in all, it was a beautifully shot film. I love the gritty texture of it. And I thought everybody involved did a fantastic job.
I think if you would have put that in an R rating, it would have done nearly as well.
No, probably not. It would have satisfied me. And that's really what Marvel should have been more, or Fox should have been more concerned with. Making me happy.
Mm-hmm.
All right, guys. Well, final verdict on this, $1 to $10. What would you pay to go see this film? Aaron?
Real easily, real simply, this is the Wolverine movie I've been waiting for. 9 out of 10. I absolutely loved it. If $10 is full price permission, I give it 9.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Scotty?
I think it takes the character in the right direction, but the story elements were a slower pace than I like. It's not a movie I'd like to see again, but the action sequences were enough to get a 7 out of 10 for me.
I liked it quite a bit. It wasn't as dark as I could wish for, but I think the movie I want will never be made because it's just not, kind of like Scotty said, mm-hmm. it's not going to make as much money. So given the parameters that they had to work in, I thought they did a fantastic job. Unfortunately, this summer has really been chock-a-block with some pretty amazing films, and I'm not quite sure if this one stands out enough amidst all the rest of them to be in the top of my list. I'm going to give it an 8. I'm going to split the difference. I was going to go 7.5, but I'll give it an 8, be right in between you two guys as I like to be.
Sandwich.
Yep, sandwiched in this hoe sandwich. Yeah.
To me, it's my second favorite movie of the summer. Star Trek was the first, but...
Nice.
All right, Scotty, you saw the to-do list, and I'm sorry about that, but what'd you think?
Yeah, I won't spend too much time on this. I was really amped to see this movie and wound up being...
Doesn't look like the rest of America did either.
Yeah, exactly. So it's about Brandy Clark, who's played by Aubrey Plaza, and she's the valedictorian of her school, but her focus on doing well in school has basically halted her sexual activity in her high school years. So her friends tell her she needs to get experience before going to college, where everybody's getting busy. So she makes a list of as many sexual activities that she can research, and decides that she's going to complete all of them during the summer of 1993. Now, this had the makings of a great film for me. It's a sex comedy. It's set in the 90s. It has a ton of actors I recognize from different movies and TV shows. Hell, the main character's last name is Clark. It sounds like a movie that should be right up my alley.
And you didn't have much sex when you were young either.
Exactly. So, sadly, this movie was just a complete disappointment.
Mean any.
Yeah, any. That's right. You were in Bible camp.
Complete disappointment. It just tried way too hard. Jokes just didn't work. It made for a funny trailer, but that's about it. It might have been more fun with a group of people, but this movie was rather dull and just really didn't feel like it was set in the time period that it was set to portray. Mm-hmm. I gave it a $4 out of 10.
Ooh!
Ooh!
Scotty's becoming a little harsh critic. He doesn't like anything anymore.
When we talked about it last week or the week before, whenever it was,
I was so giddy about it.
Like the 90s music and the different just 90s era. I mean, they had some of the clothes and that kind of stuff, but that wasn't the focus. The focus was these awkward jokes that were more miss than hit. So. Mm-hmm.
Sorry, man.
No worries.
Did you cry when you walked out?
No, but it was kind of awkward sitting in the. Shut up. I sit in the theater and I got there a little early, so it was just me. Mm-hmm. And then strolling in like two elderly couples.
Ooh, how's that make you feel? Maybe you should stop going to movies alone.
And then three 20 something girls sat like five rows behind me. And of course, oh, here's this guy came to the movie by himself to watch this sex comedy.
Hey, at least it wasn't like Turbo or something. Then it would have been really creepy.
Yeah.
All right, exactly. That's how I do it. I saw Fruitvale Station. Now, you know, it's always hard to review like serious movies because we make a lot of jokes, so I can't do that. But Fruitvale Station follows the true story of Oscar, who's played by Michael Jordan. Not that Michael Jordan. It's a different Michael Jordan.
Michael B. Jordan.
Not the Michael Jordan. It's a different Michael Jordan. Oscar's a young man. He's basically going about his day in the Bay Area on New Year's Eve 2008. And what the movie does is it follows him the entire day, and then it concludes with a confrontation at the Fruitvale BART station with police officers that kind of capture the nation's attention back at the time, because it was videotaped by a lot of people, and especially caused a lot of race issues because Oscar is a black man and the cops were white. What happened? If you really want to know and you want to, I guess, be spoiled, you can go on YouTube and find the actual video still out there, which they play before the movie starts, so you know exactly what's going to happen. It's building up to that. They show the actual video, the actual Fruitvale Station video.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's really intense, and that's where the movie starts. And then we meet Oscar, and we go from there. One thing that I really liked about the movie is we see that Oscar has been recently paroled. He can't keep a job. He's trying to be a better boyfriend and a father, but, you know, he's had a lot of mistakes there, too. He's trying to stop smoking and selling weed. I mean, he is not a good guy. By most standards. The movie never paints him to be the saint or anything else. That's kind of what I was concerned about going in, because whenever you see these real-life movies, whatever angle they're leaning toward or they're trying to showcase generally is painted as a saint. Doesn't happen. We meet his daughter's mom, played by Melanie Diaz. She loves him, but she's sick of his choices. His mom's like Octavia Spencer. You guys know her from mm-hmm. The Help. She plays Wanda and just wants him to get his life in order. For me, there's two kinds of real-life films. There's the kind of movie that are so true to life, and the kind of Hollywood, the story a little bit, where they make it all, you know, glamored up, and they try to showcase, you know, this guy. They didn't do that here. He's really a victim of his own bad choices. They never make him seem like, man, this isn't even his fault. The whole movie, all of his choices are his fault. He's the reason that all this stuff happens during this day. The point of the movie is this. No matter how much of a screw-up Oscar was, no matter how much weed he smoked or how much he couldn't hold a job, what happened to him did not deserve to happen. So because of that, I loved it. I thought Jordan plays Oscar like 100 other guys I've known in my life. He felt real. Never felt like he was acting. Even though I know what was going to happen, I was devastated when it actually did. They even actually treat the cops pretty fair. Like, they aren't seen as racist pigs and that sort of thing. I mean, they're seen as doing their job, and you kind of understand where most of them are coming from. So any movie that can do this and be that honest and fair to me deserves to be seen. I give the movie an 8.5 out of 10 just because it is hard to watch this movie again. I don't know if you're going to want to watch it more than once, but it's, to me, it was so powerful. And as much as I wasn't looking forward to it because I don't like issue movies, I'm just really glad that I saw it. So
if he would have had adamantium claws, would you have given it a 9?
Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely.
And would it have been more entertaining?
9.5.
All right,
wow. This is one of those movies that people should see and should take their kids to see, honestly. It's that kind of movie. Now let's go to the box office. The Wolverine, $53.1 million. The last Wolverine movie did $85 million, so that's quite a step down. There are a lot of people who didn't like Origins. Silly people. But worldwide, it made $141 million because it made $85 million overseas. So it's made $140 million already.
That's if they get their money.
That's if they collect their money. So it might just be the 53.
Right.
The Conjuring, for a horror movie, held on fantastic. With
wow, yeah.
Dropped only 46%, 22.2 million. Already made 83.
Well in the black.
Million. Yeah, it's already a profit. Despicable Me 2, still in the top five. 16.4 million, 306 million. That movie is huge.
I'm telling you, that movie was funny, too. I know it's a kid's movie. It was funny.
Turbo, not so much. 13.7 million, 56 million. It's going to close under 100 million, which is a flop for an animated movie like that. Grown Ups 2, somehow. Still hanging on, 11.6 million, 101 million. It's a bigger hit than Pacific Rim, Justin. How's that make
fuck
you feel?
Fuck all of you. When I was walking in to see The Wolverine, I saw some people walking into the theater to see Grown Ups 2, and I just wanted to grab them and shake them, spit in their face, and say, why are you fucking me?
Wow.
Why aren't you seeing Pacific Rim? Why are you watching this horse shit? But I didn't. I kept my cool.
Seriously?
I would have spilled my popcorn, and I went to go see my movie.
Are we going to get a second one at this point?
I doubt it now.
Financially, I mean, people on the internet, of course, are saying, I saw that it was approved. No, you didn't. It
well,
has not
originally
been
they had greenlit work to begin, but I'm betting that green light just turned a little red.
Yeah, I think it's a little at least yellow. It's going to depend on what China does and if they get paid. So,
I think overseas is going to be totally huge. What this movie is going to hinge on. Unfortunately, it seems to kind of have, when you go on the internet, a feel of Firefly, where all of the geeks have seen it, loved it, but nobody else gave it a chance. And mm-hmm. So it's one of those movies that the geeks rally behind. Unfortunately, the rest of America just doesn't follow. All right, guys, we have got five, count them, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, movies we're going to be talking about this week. Two of them open up on August 7th. The other three open up on August 9th. So, as I like to do, chronological order, here we go. Percy Jackson, Sea of Monsters is a fantasy adventure film directed by Thor Frudenthal, whose last movie was Die Hard.
Oh, I thought you were going to say actually Thor directed it.
No, well, his name is Thor, but I don't think he has a fancy hammer nor long golden locks, but you never know. Hmm. His last movie was Diary of a Wimpy Kid, so I don't really know how he got this job, but it stars Logan Lerman and Stanley Tucci, Sean Bean, and Nathan fucking Fillion. In this adaptation of Rick Riordan's book, the movie follows Percy and his friends as they go on a journey to find the Golden Fleece in the Sea of Monsters, a.k.a. the Bermuda Triangle. Aaron, are you like me and drawn in only because of Nathan fucking Fillion, or do you actually want to take a dip in the sea of monstrosity?
I only want to see it because of Nathan Fillion. I have no other interest in seeing it. That's honestly, I wish I could say I had more, but I just don't care. It just seems like a Harry Potter ripoff to me. And I know it's not, so please don't send the emails. I got it. But it just seems
stop typing
like
now.
Mm-hmm. It just seems like it.
I didn't see the first one. It didn't interest me. Much. And I doubt I'll ever see this one. And the more I see the trailer, it just looks sillier and sillier. And putting Nathan Fillion there just seems so odd.
It does. Unfortunately, he adds just some kind of air of legitimacy that I fall for.
So you're gonna go see it in the theater?
I'll rent it. I will watch it.
There you go. Hmm? Let us know in 6 months.
Yeah, I'll give you my review in 6 months. The second one, We're the Millers, is a comedy directed by Rayson Marshall Thurber of Dodgeball fame. The movie stars Jason Sudeikis, Jennifer Aniston, Will Poulter, and Emma Roberts as a fake family created for the sole purpose of moving a large shipment of pot from Mexico to the U.S. Hilarity and Jennifer Aniston's half-naked body ensue. I was originally going to hand this one off to Brian because, as I'm sure most of you know, Hollywood's yet again dipped into his mysterious criminal past. Unfortunately, he's not here. So, Scotty, what do you think of Where the Millers? Are you ready to take a look at Aniston shake her moneymaker?
I got to see it just for that alone. But I will say that although the movie looks hilarious, I was recently burned by a comedy that I thought I was going to love. So I'm a little bit skeptical, but it's one I definitely want to see with a bunch of people. I'm trying to recruit some friends to go see it because that kind of comedy is more fun when you're with a bunch of people laughing about it. So
you're not going to go alone? You sure?
Nah.
There's an old couple that's available.
Don't make fun. Yeah. It took a long time for him to go to a movie alone. He used to cry on Facebook when nobody would go.
Why won't nobody go with me?
Why won't they go?
I stopped asking on Facebook because you made fun of me.
I don't want to go alone.
Yeah, because it was kind of sad. I'm sorry.
No, I've seen movies by myself before that. I saw Fight Club by myself. That's like my all-time favorite movie.
Oh, look, our boy grows up.
Did you punch yourself like he did?
I'm not supposed to talk about it.
Okay, good call. We're the Millers looks fantastic to me. It's one of the few comedies I want to see this summer, so I will be there. Absolutely. And yeah, right after, I will sneak into Percy Jackson, so I don't have to pay for it. Just kidding.
Just that part with Nathan Fillion.
Mm-hmm.
Just look up just and see part, the time. Like,
oh, Nathan Fillion. Okay, we're done.
Yeah, this one really looks funny. And yeah, there have been some comedies that have rolled out all the funny bits in the trailer. But I like Jason Sudeikis a lot. I think the guy is extremely funny. The rest of this movie looks really funny, too. I am sure this will be a solid comedy. I don't think you're going to get to-do'd on this one. All right, August 9th, first up, a movie I wanted to talk about last week, but I got voted over. So we're going to talk about it this week, Lovelace. This one's opening in a limited release. It's a biopic directed by Rob Epstein and Jeffrey Friedman that tells the story of Linda Lovelace, played by Amanda Seyfried. Lovelace, who was one of the first porn stars, was introduced to the medium by her husband, who in this film is played by Peter Sarsgaard. The industry used and abused her before she eventually took control of her life. This movie really interests me, and not because of the titillation or just because of it. But Scotty, given your boy in a religious bubble past, this might actually all be new to you. You want to put your money down for a peep show?
I'm actually really surprised how interesting this movie looks, although it does more or less make me want to go back and watch Boogie Nights again to tide me over,
There's always a reason to watch Boogie Nights again.
Yes, awesome. There is. Julianne Moore.
There's a lot of reasons to see that.
Nope, Heather Graham. Scene with Julianne Moore.
Roller Girl's better, but Roller Girl's we can better. Fight over that later.
Yeah, it a lot of really good actors in this. I mean, I'm not a huge Amanda Seyfried, however you pronounce it, fan, but Peter Sarsgaard. It looks like a very well acted movie.
I'm just bored.
Yeah.
Yeah, I watched it. Looks interesting. I mean, concept. I know the story behind it. That sounds interesting.
See, I don't.
So. But it just looks like Boogie Nights without Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah.
And I'm not interested in that. I saw Boogie Nights. It was good. I'm done with it.
Yeah, I can't say I agree with that. Boogie Nights was tilted in a much more humorous direction than I think this particular movie is. This looks a more straight-up biopic of this woman. And Amanda Seyfried's performance of her, like in the interviews that she's doing, you know, where she's being filmed, she really seems like she's invested in that part and taken on the persona of this woman. It's really well done. It's almost creepy watching her because I can, you know, it's like almost like she's possessed. I think it looks fantastic, but
you most studied people Deep will Throat probably... very well, or
do what?
Did you study Deep Throat very closely to get that resemblance?
I've actually never seen it.
Yeah,
really? Believe it or not, I've never actually.
It's officially
seen that.
The only porn
you've seen. Avengers porn, but
hey,
you
if
haven't
it doesn't
seen...
have a superhero in it, or you know, if it's on an X-Files porn, I ain't watching it.
X-Files porn.
Oh yeah. Oh well, you haven't seen the XXX-Files?
I don't.
We'll talk
porn.
About it offline. Next up, Planes. This is a computer-generated animated film from Pixar, directed by Clay Hall and starring the vocal stylings of Val Kilmer, Terry Hatcher, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and Dane Cook. It's basically cars in the sky. Mm-hmm. You know, machines make their dreams come true with the help of their friends, blah, blah, blah. This, I could not be any less interested in a film. Scotty, are you at all interested in this one?
I'm really not. Maybe if I had like a niece or nephew that I could take it to, I could get into it with them, but there's just nothing about this that interests me at all.
I have absolutely zero interest in this. Dane Cook's doing the voice. I just feel bad for Dane Cook, but nope, no interest. Not going to be there.
So Val Kilmer has put on so much weight, he's decided to do voice acting? Is that...
Something.
So that nobody
I
can
think
see
he's
him?
Done voice acting before, has but he? But be that as it may.
His career is not as strong as it used to be, put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't really care for Cars, and I think it had to do a lot with kind of the candy coating look to those films. Mm-hmm. Even with Toy Story, there were some different elements going on that interested me, but the entire movie just looked like something created for 8-year-olds to just sit there and watch these shiny cars with big eyes race around a track.
It did nothing.
And now this one's just planes doing the same shit. It's great. I'm sure kids are really going to enjoy it, and great for them. But as you know, for me, this is one of the few Pixar films that I really just have no interest in. It. Yeah, nothing.
Got it. Understood.
All right. The last film in our talk, and probably I'm going to go out on a limb and say the one that we're all most excited about, Elysium. Now, this is a science fiction action movie written and directed by Neil. He can still do Halo, Microsoft, so please make it happen, Blomkamp. And starring Matt Damon. Please,
Matt
Aaron.
Matt Damon.
There you go. Jodie Foster, Charlton Copley, and William Fichtner, who I can't remember seeing him in the trailers at all.
No, but he's in it. It automatically is a better movie.
Yeah, that's already a point in its favor. Humans have been split into the haves and the have-nots, with the 1% living on the space station / rich man resort in space known as Elysium, while the rest of us toil on the ruined planet Earth they left behind. But when factory worker Max, played by Damon, gets hurt, the shit hits the fan and the 1% get what they got coming.
That's right.
Aaron, are you ready to root for the little guy when he takes it to that Greek version of heaven?
Obamacare in space? Yeah.
Well, Elysium is Greek for heaven. So,
yeah. I look forward to this. This is my most anticipated of the summer, easily. I love Blomkamp. I love District 9. I love when he interjects social commentary in his science fiction. Love it. And I can't wait to see it. Matt Damon just looks, you know, he looks like Matt Damon. And when he does these action roles and...
He is awesome.
With real drama involved. He is such a good actor, and he knows how to pull it off. Oh, I just love it. And I am a huge fan of Jodie Foster.
Me too. Yes. I really am.
She's been off the grid a little bit too long. I look forward to seeing her in anything, really. And just everything about it just sounds like gold.
Yeah. Walker looks vicious.
Which is funny, because I've never seen him play a bad guy. Yeah, he's done a bunch of stuff lately, but he's never been a bad guy.
Yeah.
I really look forward to seeing what he can bring to that.
I just feel like this movie would be better if it were on a train.
No, maybe the Elysium was a bullet train.
Yeah,
that would be good. I like it.
No, I'm really, really stoked to see this one. I like the concept. I like the actors. It looks gorgeous. I'm very much excited to see this one.
Yeah, Neil Blomkamp. I've loved everything he's done. He's one of those directors who I am watching to see what he does next. So far, he has not done anything I haven't liked. I even like a lot of the short videos that he's done. So
the only thing that concerns me with this one is it seems like, and I haven't seen it, so I don't know if it's true, but it seems like a smart sci-fi action thriller. And I think this time of year, people are kind of burned out on it. So I'm concerned that it's not going to be as big as it could be. That's the only thing that bothers me.
You think it would have been better?
Yeah, because once you get into August and stuff, I mean, people are burned out on these huge blockbusters. And, you know, I just hope it finds an audience. I hope it doesn't go the way of Pacific Rim. Put it that way.
I agree with you completely. And I'm really hoping that the dirtier kind of look to this, the much, much grittier look to it, will draw people in after a lot of the shine that we've gotten from most of the summer blockbusters so far.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. All right, guys, of these five films, Percy Jackson, Sea of Monsters, We're the Millers, Lovelace, Planes, and Elysium, which one are you most likely to go see that weekend, Scotty?
Elysium, by far.
And Aaron?
Elysium twice, then We're the Millers.
That's it. Let's go ahead and make it a hat trick. Yeah, by far, Elysium, much more interesting film in every respect. So that's where we're all going to be planting our asses.
All right. You can hear us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio. Give us a thumbs up if you do. Or through our RSS feed at thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can listen and subscribe for free. There's a new episode every Thursday, and every once in a while we get extra episodes. By the way, we got several emails giving us a vote on if they liked Hoes After Hours or Hoes After Dark. Not a single vote for Hoes After Hours. They were
really?
All, yep, they were all Hoes After Dark. So apparently people like the dirty connotation. So
well, that's why we stayed away from it, but give the people what they want.
I guess if they like.
We have to change the intro music to...
You can start the episode with, what's up, Justin?
Why, is that when you're pulling away from my junk?
What's this movie?
What's this movie? Each week we play ours or a listener suggested clip from a movie. And if you think you know what the clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com, tweet us or Facebook us the answer, and we'll give you a proper host shout out next week. Last week's answer was a listener's choice. Rob, he sent in, and it was Dead Man.
Let's not do that again. Listeners, you pick too hard stuff.
Yeah, you got to be a little easy.
None of us got it.
So those that got it correct, Sean M. and Stephen F. Congratulations, guys.
Wow.
Congratulations, guys. This week, it is my turn. So just because I'm a dick, here's your clip.
Stupid son bitch. Knocked itself cold. Called my ass. He's dead. Well, he killed him. We killed it. Fuck you!
All right, that was your clip. You'll understand why I'm a dick later.
Well, no, they already know why you're a dick.
Yeah, they know, but you'll know why that clip makes me one later.
You'll have better reason to call him a dick.
Yes, you'll have understanding and justification. let's go to the couch where we talk about TV and home video news. NBC has decided to jump on the remake bandwagon, and they're going to be producing two miniseries. One of Rosemary's Baby, which shocked me, and the other one of Stephen King's The Tommyknockers. Good ideas, or should we leave them alone?
Well, it's hard to say for me because, shocker, I haven't seen either of them. But I did a little research,
You have not seen Rosemary's Baby.
It was made in the 60s, man.
You haven't seen Rosemary's Baby?
No.
Jeez.
Just get up and leave.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Just go.
Well, if there's anybody else out there that has not seen this movie, it's about a couple that moves into an apartment, and there's apparently some peculiar neighbors and strange things happening. The wife gets knocked up, and then there's paranoia over the baby's safety. And that's the basic story there. So Tommyknockers is about a buried UFO that slowly turns local inhabitants into gizmo building alien mutates. But that one is actually not my words. I had to look it up.
Like Mogwai?
Like Kaiju.
Bright light.
I don't know. Both are really intriguing stories that a lot of younger people like me may not have seen because the movie was made in the 60s, like I said. And the TV show.
Tommyknockers was in the 90s.
93, 20 years ago, yeah. So I think the success of the recent King series Under the Dome is helping that along.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That's doing well.
I think Scotty was still clutching at his mom's teat when the Tommyknockers came out.
He was.
I do find it interesting, you know, obviously Rosemary's Baby was a movie while Tommyknockers was a series. You guys would be better to answer this. Is there enough story in Rosemary's Baby to make it into a miniseries? I mean, it was a two-hour movie. I mean,
I think these are both fantastic ideas. Rosemary's Baby was an interesting film. I've not read the book that it's based on, but it was an enjoyable film. Some people overhyped it a little bit for me, saying it was better than The Exorcist. And for me, The Exorcist whips its ass. But it's an interesting enough concept that I think that as a television show, they could really play up the whole mysterious neighbors. You know, are they watching her? What's going on with them? That and her pregnancy and the things that develop from it, they could definitely play that out into a nice miniseries. And The Tommyknockers is one of my favorite Stephen King books. I'm not as big a fan of his sci-fi-ish stuff as I am his straight horror, but The Tommyknockers is an amazingly good book. I've read it twice.
Shitty miniseries.
Huh?
And a shitty miniseries.
Oh, it was a terrible miniseries, even though I liked Jimmy Smits quite a bit, but he and Mark Helgenberg just didn't carry this one off. They definitely need to revisit this one. You know, unlike the remake that they did for The Shining, which was more appropriate for the book, a much better adaptation, a less entertaining piece. Hopefully they can make this one both more entertaining and more true to the book.
Well, speaking of King, his Under the Dome series, which has been a big hit this summer, was just renewed for season 2. So the question is, is there enough story to hold it for more seasons, or should they wrap this up?
Well, you know, I'm really sad to say I haven't seen it yet. And the main reason I haven't seen it is because it's not on iTunes, it's not on Hulu, it's not on Netflix. The only place you can see it is either on CBS's website or I believe Amazon has it on their service, mm-hmm. but that requires me firing up equipment I don't normally fire up. So I've kind of been just waiting and holding out until it appears on another service. So I haven't seen it. That said, have you seen the book? Mm-hmm. That thing could stop the Titanic, drop it as an anchor. It is so thick. So unless they have raced through that book, cutting out entire chapters, there's enough material here for another season.
Well, my main concern was I think they shot the series to end. So, I mean, it had a definitive ending. So I guess my question would be, do they have another ending in store? I assume they can switch it so that they can carry the series forward. But how is that going to drastically alter wherever the storylines are?
Even if they end it the way the book ends, there are ways that they could bring this back, that they could carry it on. It definitely has an ending, but it's the kind of ending that you can play out or add to. So if they want to, you know, go off book and keep it forward, sure. Yeah, they could.
I look forward to seeing what they do with that. That series has actually been really popular.
Have either of you been watching it?
I've been watching it. Yep.
I haven't.
Every episode.
Okay. Have they gotten even close to finding out what's causing it?
Not even close.
Okay.
They're still trying to figure out what it is. So.
Okay.
I don't want to say anything for people that might be in the same boat you are and they want to wait, but it's an interesting series. I didn't read the book, but it sounds really clever.
Justin, you said it's on Amazon?
Mm-hmm. From what I've seen, it's supposed to be available through Amazon Prime.
Right.
Thing. Yeah.
Well, that's on Apple TV. That's why I was curious.
No, it's not. Amazon's available on the PlayStation 2, but Amazon's service is not on the Apple TV yet. HBO Go is, but not Amazon.
Okay.
Unless you have a special one.
I was going to say, I was pretty sure I had it on mine.
Well, if you check yours and you see that it is, let me know, because I want it on mine.
All right.
Okay, now let's go to DVD and Blu-rays. Scotty?
All right, we are looking for releases that are coming out on August 6th. And just as a quick heads up, we do have a YouTube page. It's youtube.com/TheHoPodcast. And you can check for past episodes for reviews, and they are on that YouTube page as well. The first one is Oblivion. Tom Cruise and Morgan Freeman star in this movie, which takes place in a post-apocalyptic Earth. Cruise plays one of the two people left on the planet to scavenge resources after the remaining survivors fled, and a mystery begins to unravel. All four of us actually saw this one and reviewed it on episode 90. Justin gave it an $8 out of 10, Brian a 7.50 out of 10, I gave it an 8 out of 10, and Aaron gave it a 7 out of 10.
Hey, Aaron.
Aaron also reviewed on episode 89, A Place Beyond the Pines. This is a story about a motorcycle stunt driver that turns to robbing banks as a way to provide for his lover and their newborn child, a decision that puts him on a collision course with the ambitious rookie cop navigating a department ruled by a corrupt detective. It stars Ryan Gosling, Bradley Cooper, Ava Mendez, and Ray Liotta.
Ava Mendez.
Sorry,
I like that Ava Mendez. She's funny.
I was channeling O'Brien too. There. Anyway, Aaron gave that one a $7.50 out of $10. He also reviewed Mud on episode 93, gave it a $7, and what he called Matthew McConaughey's best performance, recent performance. In Mud, two young boys encounter a fugitive and form a pact to help him evade the bounty hunters on his trail and to reunite him with his true love.
It was really good.
Yeah.
You won't watch it more than once, but it's still really good.
Yeah, I'll check it out. Next up, To the Wonder. After visiting Mont Saint Michael, Michelle...
Marina, like me, man. You can't speak.
I know. I can't say it. Marina and Neil come to Oklahoma, where problems arise. Marina meets a priest and fellow exile who is struggling with his vocation, while Neil renews his ties with a childhood friend, Jane. They actually stars Ben Affleck and Olga Kurylenko, who is also in Oblivion. Last up, we've got Aftershock. It's Eli Roth actually stars in this.
Yeah, you lost me there.
Don't like Eli Roth?
Not a fan.
Oh. Bared you? Nothing?
That's acting. That's not directing. I guess this is an acting role, so I guess I could try.
All right. Try this again. Eli Roth stars in Aftershock, where a group of travelers who are in an underground nightclub in Chile when a massive earthquake hits. The group quickly learns that reaching the surface is just the beginning of their nightmare. With that, we'll move on to our Recasting the Classics segment, where every other week one of us hoes is given a movie and we're supposed to recast four of the actors as if we're made in a modern role. Last week, Brian handed it off to Justin and gave him the movie Beetlejuice, where he was to recast the title role, as well as Lydia, Adam, and Barbara. Justin, lay it on us, buddy.
All right. This isn't a film that is as near and dear to my heart as past ones have been, so recasting it didn't prove as torturous. First up, the character of Adam, who was originally played by Adam Baldwin. He's the father of this family that moves into a new house. I chose to take on his role.
Alec Baldwin, not Adam Baldwin.
Oh, Alec, fuck me up the ass.
I'll pass, but different guy.
You want me to change or redo that?
No, fuck it. Fuck him up. Right. Fuck me up. Fuck him up. Sounds good.
Yeah, Alec Baldwin. I chose Matthew Perry. The guy hasn't been getting enough work lately, and I think that he's a quality guy, seems age appropriate. He's funny, and I think he could take on the role of this of the dad who is earnest in the beginning but kind of gets into it. I think he could take it on pretty well.
His show isn't bad either, that Go On.
Have you seen? Didn't it get canceled, though?
Probably.
I don't know. I'm sure he's available no matter what.
For his wife, Barbara, who was originally played by Gina Davis, I went with Tina Fey.
Ooh, love Tina Fey.
Yeah.
She's smart. She's capable. She's extremely funny, which the role calls for. And I think she makes a good physical and appearance-wise match for Matthew Perry. They look like a couple to me. When I put their pictures side by side on my computer to kind of see, did they work together? They actually look like they work together really well.
Yeah, I can see that.
All right, now for their daughter, Lydia, who was played by Winona Ryder. This one was a harder one. There are a lot of young ladies who are acting these days, some of them funny, some of them more dramatic and serious. I wasn't quite sure which direction I wanted to go, but then I finally settled on what I fear is going to be – fuck fear. I love it when it's controversial. A controversial pick.
Okay.
I picked to replay Zac the role Efron. That Winona Ryder did, Kristen Stewart.
Oh, God.
No, that makes sense.
Consider Winona Ryder's character was a very emo goth chick.
Yeah.
I think Kristen Stewart could play the hell out of an emo goth chick.
I think she has in every movie she's been in.
Well, but with more humor to it. She can definitely do humor. She's done humor before. I think she could do it again here.
I don't know. Winona Ryder smiled in that movie, so...
I think Kristen Stewart smiled in some of her other films. It's just kind of hard to see.
She has it just looks painful when she does it. She's like, oh.
Like, ow.
You can hear the creaking.
All right, now for Beetlejuice himself. Of course, Michael Keaton, the film. Hell, I saw a shirt the other day on T-Fury or one of those sites that was a Beetlejuice shirt. It is widely known. You just see the character and you know exactly who it is. So who do you get to replay that role that is so comedic and so broad? Who do you get? And my first instinct, and I didn't go with him, but my first instinct was to really kind of go far afield and cast Russell Brand.
Okay.
I think he's got an interesting look to him, and I think that he could play the role not in a slapsticky way, but in a maybe a more dry, droll way.
Stop throwing your honorable mentions and commit to somebody.
But I wanted to stick with somebody who was a little bit more like Michael Keaton, and so I settled on Will Arnett.
Will Arnett.
Hmm. He plays Job in Arrested Development.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I think he's almost a new Michael Keaton.
I wouldn't give him that, but I could see where you're going. Okay.
His I like that.
Job is hysterical. And I really think you slap some makeup and a funny costume and he would eat up scenery like Pac-Man. Just chomp, 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 chomp.
He could do the voice too. He's got a good low voice.
Yes, he could.
I think if they ever did do Beetlejuice, they would need to take the character, have him look different, have him sound different. I mean, they would have to make it drastically different. And Arnett, I could see doing that.
I think even if you did change it, Arnett would do a really good job. Mm-hmm. So there you go.
I hope that didn't find it controversial
recasting.
At all,
unless Aaron has been deleting them, I really haven't seen a lot of feedback from our listeners regarding our recasting the classics, either with their own picks or with comments regarding our picks. I'm hoping that if I encourage people to send in emails or Facebook posts about our recastings that maybe they'll offer up some more of their own opinions. I'm curious how people take us recasting such iconic roles.
I'm more curious who they would pick for Beetlejuice.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he is the title character.
He is. All right, in 2 weeks, it's my turn. What am I recasting?
All right, well, because I'm a dick.
Mm-hmm. We know.
You're going to recast Tremors.
Okay.
I want you to recast Kevin Bacon's character of Valentine McKee. I want you to recast Fred Ward's Earl Bassett. I want you to recast the young love interest played by Finn Carter. Her character's name was Rhonda LeBeck.
She was so cute.
She was. And I want you to recast Burt Gummer, made immortal by Michael Gross.
God, that. All right. That sounds awesome. Should I cast it as a sci-fi version or a monster version or a comedy?
Well, there's really no sci-fi version to fucking do, so.
I guess we'll get there. Speaking of sci-fi, our From the Outside In topic this week, with Elysium coming out, we're going to talk about science fiction movies. Now, we're not going to go through everything with science fiction because we'd be here, well, we'd have to have a whole new episode. But we are going to exclude Star Wars and Star Trek. We get it. Everybody loves them. So we're not talking about those tonight. Okay, we promise. Except for maybe the cliche stuff. But first up, we're going to talk about what our favorite movies are. Before that, we're going to talk about the most annoying sci-fi film cliches. The stuff that we wish they would stop doing because we've seen it way too much. Let's go with Scott. Let's start first. What are the most annoying film cliches in the sci-fi universe?
I think mine are less cliches and more things that just don't make scientific sense. You know what I'm saying? Like, the first one is explosions in space. When something blows up and there's just this giant fireball, granted, I understand there's probably going to be some oxygen reserves in whatever aircraft that's being blown up or something like that. And I understand that explosions are pretty to see on the screen, but, you know, things don't blow up in a vacuum. It just, you know, that always kind of bugs me.
That's a good point. You know what else? They don't make sounds.
Yeah.
You wouldn't hear that. You just, that's what you would hear.
Well, but how fucking exciting would the Death Star explosion have been had it been this?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Not very fucking exciting.
You make a good point. And the same thing could be said with laser blasts. You know, in a vacuum, they're, you wouldn't see them at all.
No. Well, yeah.
And they wouldn't, you know, fly like an arrow, you know, that at that speed. It would be like very much, very quicker, that kind of thing. The only other one I really had that kind of annoys me, and this kind of comes back to like Star Trek. You know how like when Star Trek or anything where they have an on screen and they meet with another ship and they have a conversation. Space is like there's no up and down in space. It's space, but somehow they always come up to each other and right side up every single time, no matter what.
They're just like, hey, what's up? We're even.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that in a movie or TV, you're not going to take the time to like, okay, hang on, wait, we're going to reorient before we have a conversation. I get it, but...
They could now, damn it. Yeah, they got so many effects.
So, that and lens flares. And I'm done.
Lens flares are good. Good call. why do most sci-fi films, do the aliens always speak the same damn language? Seriously, like, they just like pop up at some random planet and like some guy with two heads is, hey, what's up, guy?
They're
not like, you know, very, very rarely. I'm saying most sci-fi films. Some of the big franchises do that to shake it up, but most sci-fi films, everybody speaks English. Everybody.
And they have an English accent.
Yeah, I don't
get
that.
That was one of the things I loved about Star Wars. You know, Greedo didn't say a word of English. A lot of those aliens didn't say a word of English. Chewie didn't speak a word of English, but Han sure knew what he was saying, and he sure replied back to him in English.
Another
I kind of like that.
Another one, why does no other planet have water? What, they're always coming to our planet to get water. Are there no other fucking planets that have water? Leave ours alone. I mean, we won't even drink it out of the tap. I don't understand why they're coming why they're coming here. Oh, a couple other ones. There's an alien spacecraft. We never have a problem learning how to fly the fucking thing. We just hop right in, and we're like 2 minutes later. You know, we create viruses and shit.
You just call this Independence Day, and I think you could just call every cliche that movie has.
Oh, is this going to be
so we can take down the aliens with Morse code? You can bring that one if you bring Independence Day into it. Why does nobody look at a guy with two heads weird, speaking of the two-headed guy? They get off this thing, you know, how do you get used to that? I don't care if you live in this fantasy world. How do you get used to a guy with like two heads or a giant green head or whatever the hell they got without looking at him going, whoa, dude. Yeah. We still look at little people weird. It's not fair that these guys are looking at these freaking
people. Don't speak for all of us.
And my biggest one is why does the warp drive always fail? Right when you need it the most. That guy that makes that, whoever developed that thing, should be working at fucking Home Depot.
It's not his fault.
Why isn't it?
They told him they fixed it.
This is
they
true.
They told me they fixed it.
This is true. What about you, Justin?
Well, you know, people, when they go to these unknown planets and yet they land, jump right out of the cockpit with no helmet, no breathers, no nothing, no precautions whatsoever against disease, toxins, gases that might kill them. Same thing in Prometheus. I mean, within 5 minutes, they're taking off their helmets.
Yeah,
sounds good. Smells good enough to
me. We're good, guys.
Everybody
else
taking the fucking helmets off.
They made a big deal about that, though, didn't they? Like,
yeah, we're good.
Don't take off your helmet.
They made about a half second.
They made about a half second deal out of
it. People who assume immediately upon meeting an alien that they are extremely nice or they're extremely violent. There's no wait and see approaches. They either come out shooting or handing them, you know, the keys to the spaceship.
You know what I'd love to see? Like a movie where the alien looks like Aliens, you know, like James Cameron Aliens or Ridley Scott Aliens, and is actually a good guy.
Well, they look extremely vicious, and yeah, they're all Care Bears.
They even do that right on the back of your neck thing, but then they're like, what's up?
That's just them tapping you on the shoulder. Mm-hmm.
Like, how you doing? Want to cuddle? That's what I would love to see. That would be fantastic. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay. Another thing I hate are hive minds. I think they've been used far too often. You know, whether it's technological like the Borg or the enemy in the Avengers, or hell, even the battle droids in the prequel episodes, mm-hmm. Or their telepathic hive minds like Slither or Starship Troopers.
I love Starship Troopers.
Usually the reason they do these hive minds is so that you can present a massive enemy to fight, and then by taking out one thing, you've brought the entire army to a standstill. And that was the one thing that really kind of irked me about the ending of the Avengers, is that they have to face this massive army, and then with the detonation of that nuclear weapon, spoiler alert, it's all over with. Every soldier on Earth drops to the ground. There should be a little more consequence. They should still have to fight some more. So hive minds, time travel. I mean, who the fuck doesn't do time travel episodes or movies these days? Mm-hmm. Star Trek fucked that out a long time ago. Let's see, AIs that take over the world. At this point, would any of us trust an AI and plug it into the internet? Have we not seen The Matrix? Have we not seen Terminator?
Mm-hmm.
Or two? Or three?
Or four?
Mega corporations like Alien and Total Recall were basically one company now owns everything. And the last one I've got is aliens that used to come here to Earth all the time back in the day and then just kind of stopped. Stargate did it. Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull did it. Alien versus Predator, Transformers, Revenge of the Fallen. Could go on and on. What the fuck, man? Why'd they stop coming way back in the day?
Mm-hmm.
Good call. So anyway, there's some of my cliches.
Hey, how come, I just thought of this, there's six movies, nobody cuts their hand off with a lightsaber. You'd think at some point one of those twirling bastards would miss. I'm just saying. There would be an accident.
Dude, they have
at
the
some
force,
point.
Man.
Yeah, but they don't have the force. That doesn't keep it from going bzzz through their hand. It has no problem cutting everybody off when it looks dramatic.
Well, I thought of another one. How about like ancient technology that hasn't been used for thousands of years but just works perfectly as soon as somebody finds it?
Oh, well, shit. I mean, hell, this can really even go into the Indiana Jones kind of movies. These wooden and stone gears that have been sitting there in the jungle for like 100 years, and yet as soon as you kick that stone, that fucker's working like clockwork.
A giant boulder rolls off there like no problem.
It's like, excuse me? I can't get my shit to work that I brought home last week. I mean, they built that shit to last.
You don't have to oil it up or anything.
There's no WD-40 in that cave.
Exactly. Some of our listeners had some decent ones. Justin Vaughn said, terrible weather of some sort prevents escape. Like, how about the hurricane in the Deep Blue Sea or the dust storm in Prometheus? It's a good call. A critical piece of equipment's damaged or stolen, all the time machine's control switch. Scott M. said, biggest pet peeve is time travel. Star Trek has used that one up. Like Justin just said, it has. I'm really sick of that. That being a plot device. Like, be done with it.
You know? If you're going to use it inventively, do something interesting with it. Like most of the time they don't.
I don't know what else you could do with time travel. I mean, unless you're going to go back and break shit instead of fixing it, which they end up doing it anyway.
I actually have a book in mind that's all about time travel, but I think it's going to be interestingly done.
We'll buy it later.
Thank you.
All right, now let's go to our favorite sci-fi films. Now, keep in mind, we are excluding Star Trek and Star Wars, because otherwise all Justin would be doing is trying to compile a list. What order do they fit in? So we're excluding those. So we'll do our top three, and we'll talk about some of our other favorites. We're not going to just leave things out. But what are your top three favorite science fiction films, Justin?
All right, well, excluding Star Trek and Star Wars, I would have to say that my number three favorite, and people are sick to death of hearing me talk about it, but Cloud Atlas, I think, is an amazingly well-done, thought-provoking, thinking man's science fiction film.
That's your number three all-time favorite movie?
Number three. Uh-huh. I love it.
He gave it a 20 out of 10.
Man. That's true. He gave it 20, and there's not even he would pay twice.
Number two, strangely enough, I actually have to go with John Carter. That film was criminally missed in the theaters. I've seen it now on DVD about four times. I enjoy it every single time. It is space opera. It's wonderful. I think the entire cast works. So well done. Yeah, America just ignored it. And for that, I hate all of you who haven't seen it.
Oh, I saw it. I just didn't like it.
Fuck y'all.
I didn't think it was a top three all time. You know,
What it does is it appeals to that part of me that loves the old serial adventures, the old, you know, the old Tarzans, the old Conans, those kinds of old-fashioned stories that you just don't get anymore. This one took that story and really put a nice modern kind of face on it with all the effects that they've got. I cannot say enough about Linda Collins, who played the lead female. Mm-hmm. She was so magnificent. Every time I watch it, I fall more and more in love with her in that character. I loved it. I did. I can't talk enough, though. I think I have.
And before you get to your number one, we have Brian Williams is finally with us. What's up, Brian?
Hey, better late than never.
Hey, you're just glad you showed up. We're in our top three, and we are moving forward. So Justin is getting ready to – he's already told us, what is it, Cloud Atlas and
– John Carter.
John Carter are his three and two. We're excluding Star Wars and Star Trek. You're aware of that.
Yeah, of course.
So Justin, what is your number one sci-fi movie ever?
Now, can I use a franchise, or does it have to be one film?
I don't care. You care what I tell you anyway. You're going to tell me what
– If I'm going for a franchise – Easily The Matrix. Mm-hmm. There's not even a question, but if you would make me pick one, Matrix Reloaded.
I just don't understand. See, once again, we lost half our listeners.
I fucking love Reloaded. It takes everything the first one did and does it better. Turns it up to 11. I love it.
All right. That's fair, man. I don't agree with most of those, but it's fair.
Thank you.
Hey. It's your list.
Let's hear your list.
Well, we're getting to mine. I'm last. Brian, right in time, man. What's your three favorite sci-fi movies outside of Star Wars and Star Trek?
Okay. One is an independent movie called Primer.
Oh, I don't know. Never seen it.
That's time travel done right.
Yeah, it's very, very confusing.
I got to look that one up.
I believe it's on Netflix right now, so... It's an independent movie. I mean, and it is so independent. The guy even thanks his mom in the credits for being the catering service.
Oh, that's excellent.
That's how independent this movie is. But it's done very, very smartly. So smartly that there's people doing term papers and stuff on this type of on the movie. So,
and not a lens flare to be seen.
No, to my knowledge, I do not remember one, but I may have to go back and watch it just for that.
Oh, wait, I think I have seen that. Is it the one where they create the time machine and a...
Yeah, it's like two normal guys, they end up creating a time machine, and I think they do it by accident, but throughout the course of the movie, there's like nine different timelines. You just don't really know which one you're in.
I have seen that one, yeah.
Okay.
So, pretty good.
Number two.
Number two is an oldie, but I think it still works now, even though there's some very bad outfits and some cheesy... lights and that kind of stuff. But Logan's Run.
Oh, good call. Yeah.
Yeah, just when they get when they get out of the this utopian environment, whatever it is, when they do sneak out, you actually see a lot of, I mean, you see some really good special effects for that time period. I mean, it's stuff that would actually hold, it puts sci-fi stuff to shame. You know, like overgrown White House and stuff like that. That is really fantastic. And it was just one of those like, wow, this, you know, when I just remember watching it as a kid and just kind of being blown away by it. So it's always kind of stuck with me. And if I ever catch it on cable, it's one that I usually just continue watching because it's kind of funny to watch all these people in velvet body suits kind of floating around in the air sometimes. So,
and number one?
I'm pulling a Justin and I'm giving you two because they're from the same franchise.
Okay.
But for two different reasons. I love them equally, and that's Alien and Aliens. I love the first one because it's more horror. It's got kind of more of a horror, and I believe the suspense is a little bit more, is done a little bit better in that one. But I love the action and the, you know, the all the shooting and guns and all that stuff from the second one. So I don't want to call the Alien franchise because a couple of those movies are shit. But the first two are done fantastic, and they're completely different.
They are polar opposite.
Absolutely. It's not just taking, okay, this worked, so we're going to do this again and just put in a few extra people and expand it slightly. No, it's a totally different movie. But they both work very well in their own right. So
everybody has a lot of choices that I wasn't expecting. I'm surprised by. Scott?
Well, mine are going to be ones you exactly expected.
Yeah, because we know you.
But actually,
I've only seen three.
Yeah.
My first one was actually also Alien, the original Alien. There are very few older movies that I still enjoy watching to this day. I know that one wasn't, it's not like a classic movie like in the 40s or something, but that movie I still love to watch today. I mean, mm-hmm. Ever since we started doing this show, I don't go back and watch a whole lot of older stuff anymore. I'm always trying to get that new thing to mm-hmm. watch, to talk about or something like that. I still go back and watch the original Alien. I actually prefer Alien over Aliens because I like the claustrophobia. I like the horror element. It's just my kind of movie. Second one, no surprises, the Back to the Future series. We talked about time travel, and that one I probably have seen Back to the Future outside of Star Wars and that kind of thing. I have probably seen Back to the Future more than any other movie. Those three movies, well, the first
you can't
one in
go
particular.
Wrong with that.
Yeah. And my last one is Inception. You guys know my love for that movie, so.
How did I not think of that? Shit.
Yeah.
It's on my list.
That movie just is one of those movies that you get at the end and it finally all makes sense and it clicks and I go back and watch it and I still pick up little bit things.
Depends
here
who
and
you're
there.
Talking to. Because if you talk to some people, I'm like, did you watch the same movie?
Well, not necessarily click, but there's just things that.
It makes more sense to you
right.
overall.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's definitely one that's open for interpretation, and which makes it more fun to watch multiple times because you kind of get a different spin on it. I love the whole concept.
So. Well, my choices are more grounded in reality because that's just how I am. I don't, you know, too sci-fi, and I go, okay. Number three, Jurassic Park.
Oh, now things make so much more sense.
Well, that and the fact that I have facts behind me, but that's beside the point. Number three is Jurassic Park. I just, the whole concept of it and creating dinosaurs in a lab and they just run amok seeing dinosaurs on the screen. I mean, everything just came together as one of my all-time favorite experiences. I love that movie. I watch it all the time still. You know, the first one. Don't lump me into the other movies. Number two would be Predator.
Mm, God.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Which is really hard because, you know, you try to, you know, there's so many good sci-fi movies, you know, and you don't want to leave out Serenity and all those stuff. But I had to because Predator is the one. That movie can be on TNT, or it can be in my DVD player, or I can be just passing by, somebody's watching it at their house. I have to stop, I have to sit down, I have to watch it.
It's just cool.
Go to the chopper.
If it bleeds, we can kill it. And my number one sci-fi movie, shouldn't be a surprise, Escape from New York. I had a huge...
Oh, shit, how did I not know to see that one coming?
I had a huge debate over it, because now it doesn't look very... It doesn't hold up. It just doesn't. But at the time, it was futuristic. It was sci-fi. It was sci-fi. It is a sci-fi movie, even if it looks like shit nowadays. I love it. Kurt Russell, fucking awesome. If he could still just slip in back into that eye patch, I'd be happy. Just don't let John Carpenter direct it, and I'd love to see more Snake Plissken.
Or like Escape from Chicago, or
no? I mean, they could go like they wouldn't. The budget for this would be very minimal. They mm-hmm. would have to spend hardly a dime on this because, I mean, you could just go to Detroit.
No shit.
It looks just like that now.
Just turn the camera on.
I mean, you could make a – I mean, talk about making a profit on this movie. Holy moly.
And just, it might bring Detroit back too.
It might.
Well, you know what I noticed is missing from your list though, Aaron?
What's
a distinct
that?
Lack of Dennis Quaid. No Inner Space?
No Enemy Mine. No
Enemy Mine?
I love
what
Inner Space.
What the fuck?
Sorry, man.
Well, this is your man crush, and you're just leaving him out?
I am.
Man.
He doesn't deserve Kurt Russell's space. You know what I'm saying?
Wow.
I love the Quaid, but he's not Kurt Russell. He is not Kurt Russell.
Whoa.
Real quick, because I don't want to spend all day on it.
I feel like that was directed at me.
Yeah, it was. Some honorable mentions. Any that you really want to bring up? Go ahead, Justin. You can go first. God knows.
All right. Well, if I'm looking for sci-fi animation, WALL-E is fantastic. If I'm looking for comedy, Galaxy Quest is
mine.
Fantastic sci-fi.
It was so good.
If I'm wanting horror, Event Horizon is one of the scariest sci-fi horror films I've ever seen. Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind is an amazing thinking man sci-fi movie.
Have you got and a musical while you're at it?
I don't, but one that's kind of a surprise for me when I remembered it, Real Steel.
Oh, that's
a science
good.
Fiction family film. Yeah. It is a fantastically fun and interesting. I've seen it several times on DVD. I still enjoy it. Such a great little movie.
Any other ones for you, Brian?
Oh, man. Cube? I don't know if you can really...
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, it's kind of sci-fi.
That's a feel-good movie.
yeah, that'll make you smile when you're done.
I think really because that was just one of those that I, nobody had told me about it. I stumbled upon it by accident and was... Just, I mean, I even got my mom watched it and loved it just because it was so out there. She's, you know, she's miss very not much like those kind of movies. She's very much, you know, the romantic movies, rom-coms, that kind of stuff. And even she was kind of blown away by it. So,
well, the math was legit in that movie too.
Mm-hmm.
The equations and all that. We actually like paused the movie and went back and like figured it all out. And it checks out.
Wow.
Didn't
yeah,
that.
That's a little more into it than I really was.
Yeah, I'm a nerd.
Yeah, I'm not into
yeah.
the maths.
Yeah, Brian's
obviously,
like, I don't...
Because if you drop tungsten rods, it will fuck shit up. But let's move on.
Scotty, you got any?
I had Galaxy Quest, the only other honorable mention I had. And
stole your thunder.
And the Matrix, the original Matrix, not the second
Yeah,
one.
The original Matrix. See how nobody says part two?
I like the series. I do like it all, but the first one is the one I enjoy the most.
I think Justin picks Matrix Reloaded because he knows everybody else hates it.
No, it's because it is so fucking awesome. It does everything the first film did, and it does it better. Someday we'll have to do an After Dark episode about the Matrix, and I'm not going to browbeat people, but I will explain why I think the second one's the best of the series. But
I would be really interested in that, actually.
I would probably not, but I can pretend to be. My honorable mention would be Planet of the Apes. Love Planet of the Apes. The original.
Forgot about that.
What's that?
I forgot about that one.
That would be one of my honorable mentions. Terminator 2, easily. Serenity, love. They Live. Love They Live.
Came here to chew bubblegum and kick
ass.
Some ass. All out of bubblegum.
The Thing. Love The Thing because I love Kurt Russell and Carpenter as long as it's before a certain decade. And Pitch Black.
Which is
funny because...
Oh, I cannot believe I didn't mention any of the Riddick movies.
I know, man. And Pitch Black is one of those movies where I saw it and hated the movie. The first time I saw it, I absolutely hated Pitch Black.
Really?
Did not like it at all. The only thing I liked was, man, the character's cool, but this movie fucking sucks. Because I thought it was going to be something else. Mm-hmm. And then I went and saw it again because it kind of went... It's one of those movies where I went home and it kind of sat with me a little bit. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe I didn't give it a fair shot. So I'm going to go check it out again. Started slowly but slowly. The more times I saw it, I've liked it more and more. To this day, I still like it more every time I watch it. And it's all Vin Diesel. So he can act. I don't care what the haters say. I mean, he plays that guy anyway.
Should we now go into a little bit of the whole Tremors thing?
Because we are going to read off some of the listener suggestions. It's pretty funny.
Okay. Yes, let's.
Peter Germany, we'll get through them and then you can have your little tangent. Peter Germany, Aliens, Tower Seaver, Enemy Mine, David Billups, the first Starship Troopers movie is one of my favorites, and Gattaca. Good call.
Gattaca was good.
I forgot about Gattaca. Nathan Gorman said Little Shop of Horrors and Polka Hot Ass. Oh, wait. Thought you said porns. Everybody's a joke. Carlos Hernandez, Fifth Element and Battle Beyond. Oh,
that's so good.
And Battle Beyond the Stars.
Ugh. Oh, Richard, was it Rich? What, John Boy? Is that?
I hated that.
Well, he got Fifth Element, and so did Hugh O'Donnell. He picked Fifth Element too. So that's a good one. Good call. Travis Morgan, Terminator, Ghost in the Shell.
Oh, that is so good.
Mm-hmm. Wall-E, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, AI. I disagree on that one. Transformers, Matrix, District 9, Inception, Minority Report. Too many to list. Well, you did a good job trying.
Minority Report was really good.
Yeah, Minority Report is pretty good. Let's see, Amanda S., Serenity, Kevin Jenner, Tremors 1 and 2. We'll get there. Greg Swigert, 2001, Justin McCumber, bitch, bitch, bitch. Justin McCumber, bitch, bitch, bitch. Brad P., Dark City, Akira, Brazil, and Blade Runner. And that's, I think that's it. Paul Hanahan, Aliens easily tops the list. The Last Starfighter. Scott, how do you not mention that?
It's cheesy fun. It's not like...
Event Horizon, Serenity, Enemy Mine, and Critters. Fucking love Critters. Scott Grimes. Justin Vaughn, The Original Time Machine, Forbidden Planet, War of the Worlds, Event Horizon, Tron, 12 Monkeys, Terminator 2. Oh, Stephen White, Aliens, Moon. Nobody said Moon.
Yeah, I was
just... Yeah.
Serenity and Event Horizon.
It's not anywhere near the favorite list.
Now, what the fight was, Justin and I had a huge Facebook fight, which carried over because... the gentleman said that Tremors, I'm going to say gentleman because I think he's a gentleman. He wants to partake in our serving.
No problem with the guy.
A gentleman until proven different. Huh?
And he said it's sci-fi. I agree. Tremors is sci-fi. Justin swears it is not science fiction.
Tremors is in no way science fiction.
Hmm. What is it? Historical?
It's an action adventure film. And I mean, if you want to put some other kind of label on it, sure. It's a historical film. There is nothing science fiction about it. And even if a couple of characters speculate that the Graboids might have come from space at some point, that still doesn't make it science fiction.
Well, I want to say that science fiction is it's a broad-ass term, first of all. There is evidence that there is scientific validity to it. They do find a fossil throughout the series, and in Tremors 2, I believe it was, where it predates to prehistoric times. But they also speculate that it could also come from space. They never actually say where they come from. There's a lot of variances on it. The series aired on Sci-Fi.
Who gives a shit? Sci-Fi also airs Merlin. Don't make that science fiction.
Oh, hang on, Sparky. I'm not done yet.
I'm just going to shoot your shit down.
And are you? Okay. Because IMDb classifies it as a comedy horror science fiction film. So I guess IMDb. You could tell me how wrong I am, but I'm just saying that the internet says you're wrong.
There's nothing scientific about it. The Graboids, as far as that movie shows, wasn't created through science fiction means. It wasn't some mad scientist.
The number one,
it wasn't a toxic spill.
And they didn't come through some magic fairyland portal stuff.
Holes at the bottom of the Pacific that they came
through. Not all science fiction has to come from fucking space and magic fairies, man.
Well, sure it does, but it has to employ science in some way to create the drama that's going on. Graboids weren't created via science. They weren't stopped via science. The only science that's in it is when the geologist figures out that they were probably here in prehistoric times. That's it.
That would be...
Biology is part of science.
I'm just letting you know.
Just because there's science in it doesn't make it science fiction.
Actually, it does exactly make it science fiction.
There is science in a lot of shit, but it's not science fiction.
I'm just telling you the number one resource considered by everyone on the internet classifies it as a science fiction film.
It classifies it in the third fucking section, and it is not
science. It classifies it as a science
fiction film. You keep trying to break in.
Yeah, sorry, Brian. Go ahead. Yeah. What were you going to say?
There's no explanation given. As far as we're concerned, they were there, which means they're a scientific being of this planet or another one. So as far as I'm concerned, it's sci-fi.
Doja!
Scott? Y'all can say
There's no magic, you know, there's no unicorns, there's no wizards, there's nothing like that explaining their existence. There's nothing explaining the fact that they were spawned from some, teenager's Satan cult worshiping or something like that.
Okay, so then the lack of explanation makes it science fiction?
The lack of those two makes it, by proxy, just makes it science fiction.
No, you people have no...
Oh, we're all wrong.
Oh my God!
You gotta go racist now.
Oh my God!
The IMDb's wrong. The internet's wrong. All the people on Facebook are wrong. Brian's wrong. Scott's wrong, and I'm wrong.
You're gonna use the quote unquote internet to back you up. According to that, then Justin Bieber and Cats should be ruling the world.
I am telling you, I did lots of research because I know you're going to bring this up, and I saw science fiction Tremors listed in science fiction all over the place, not just on the IMDb.
It everywhere, but it doesn't change the fact.
It doesn't change the fact that you're wrong and you refuse to admit it.
Nothing science fictiony about it. Nothing. Well, is Anaconda a science fiction fucking film? Is Lake Placid a science fiction
film? So that was a snake. That was a crocodile. These were
aliens. It's also a snake bigger than any snake ever found, and it's a crocodile bigger than any ever found. But because there's no explanation for how they were created, should we suddenly assume aliens delivered them, or it's something else science fictiony? No.
Apparently, science fiction means that it has to have a fucking Doctor Who telephone booth, or it's got to have some kind of spaceship. That isn't how science fiction works.
Science fiction should employ science or technology that does not currently exist, bringing in the science and the fiction. Every film we have talked about thus far tonight has employed that criteria.
Every film you've talked about. Every single one of them. Not mine.
Okay, what film did you mention that doesn't employ science or technology not currently existing?
Escape from New York.
Escape from New York also takes place in the future. He also has hologram shit. We don't have that.
No, that was Escape from L.A., but that's beside the
same
point.
Same shit.
Sorry, man. I mean,
you could sit here and show me whatever site you want. It doesn't change the fact. It's not science fiction. Facts don't change your mind.
Only your mind changes
your
mind.
You're not showing me facts. You're just showing me anybody else's opinion.
You're not showing shit. You're just making your opinion.
I exactly explain why it's not science.
I have given you several different variances as to why you're wrong, and you still say you're right.
No, you're not. All you've said is that because they don't explain where it came from, and one of the characters speculated that it may have come from space, makes it science fiction. No, those don't.
Well, people that classify your film said that it is, so I guess we're just going to have to go with what they say.
After they mention comedy and after they mention horror, science fiction, you really shouldn't even be listed, but they listed it anyway. At the tail end of the bullshit, because even they know that is some weak shit.
Really? Because I think it's alphabetical order, but that's beside the point.
It's crap. It is not science fiction. And please, if there's anybody who can bring an argument better than, well, we don't know how they got here, please show me.
It's rooted in science, man. Biology is science.
So what? Because it's biology. Who gives a shit? It's science that it currently exists.
So basically your argument is it's not science fiction because it has science in it, but it's not science. I don't understand what your argument is.
She's using science to try and figure out what this existing creature is. They didn't make the creature using science.
They didn't find
a way to defeat it using science.
Oh my God, you're just like creating a whole genre.
Currently existing, her understanding of biology to try and figure out its origins here on Earth.
Well, that is not
science fiction.
Well, we'll agree to disagree that you're wrong.
No, I'm not agreeing that we're disagreeing.
Well, we're agreeing that we're disagreeing because we're done with this. So let's move on. Facebook. We always appreciate everybody that likes the page. So we want to say thank you to all those that did. And this past week, Kevin Jenner, Tim Schneck, and Gene King. So thank you guys for liking on Facebook. And if you like Facebook, we will mention you on the show next week. Now let's go to emails. Okay, and the first one comes from Kaspars. I guess that's how you say his name. So if I said it wrong, sorry, man. Hi, thanks for great entertainment. What are you guys' opinion about the upcoming book trilogy Wool, Shift, and Dust by Hugo Howley? An adaptation in the movies. I've read the books and I must say that they are amazing. The director of the movies will be Ridley Scott, which makes this project promising. Just want to know your thoughts about this project because I love the books and I was wondering maybe you heard something about more about the project. Thanks for the great podcast. I haven't heard anything about that. Have you, Justin?
No, this is the first time I'm actually hearing about those.
Do you know that series at all?
No.
Oh. Well, I guess
what's the series?
Wool, Shift, and Dust by Hugo Howley.
I've never heard of it either.
No, I never heard of it. But we will definitely check that out. Madeline, she wanted us to know that Brian didn't give her the wrong author because she didn't even notice it last week on the show. She was actually referring to the Jay Delaney book. So thanks for that. Yeah, woot woot. So even though he didn't feel bad, he feels less bad now. we had a bunch of tweets, but honestly, the show has been hard wrapping it up this week. So I want to thank everybody for tweeting. We will try to get a better grasp of it next week. It's been a really hard week. I'll try to collect them for next week's show. So, and plus, Justin and I have been fighting all day.
I love how we will try to get a better grasp on it when we haven't seen any of the emails.
Hey, man, I don't know what to tell you. Go to Twitter more often, H_Outsider. I want to thank the host for being here. Brian, even though you just showed up, thanks for being here. Brian Williams.
Hey, I'm all about the minimal effort.
Appreciate it, man. He also, Brian, is interested in starting a fantasy football league for whole listeners. So if you guys are interested, no cost, not going to be money, it's just going to be for fun, and you can play against us hosts. Email Brian at thehollywoodoutsider.com. That's Brian at thehollywoodoutsider.com, and he will go over that. He will give you details if you're interested. Anything you want to say about that?
Yeah, probably just, I mean, it'll probably be about 12 teams. You and I are in there at least. So there's, you know, so we basically got around 10 spots. Scotty is wussing out, so, oh well.
Justin,
sorry for you people. I mean,
I'll do it if you need an extra spot, but I'd rather have a listener in there than me.
Way to spill it. Justin doesn't have any
interest. I'm in two other leagues, man.
I understand.
Me too.
Justin McCumber, who, as he mentioned, is going to be at SpaceCon?
Space City Con.
By the time you're listening to this, he should be there. And if you're listening after Sunday, he's already gone.
Come by and tell me how wrong Aaron is, and we can commiserate together.
A Minor Magic and Haywire are available now at Amazon, paperback, Audible, Kindle, everywhere. Justin, thanks for being here, even when you're wrong.
Yeah, thanks for being an asshole.
I try.
Scotty Clark. So easy for you, though.
Yeah, not very hard.
Mm-mm. No.
And Scott Clark.
I don't have a book. I don't have a fantasy football league to set up, but I'm just going to sit at home and do nothing for a while. So thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for being here. And remember, guys, next time you go to the theater, buy popcorn.
Thanks for joining us, Brian.
You got to hear Justin.
That's how Brian works. We get her all lubed up and steam and ready to go, and then he just swoops in to finish it off. We handled your shit.
Yeah, we did. So maybe you ought to listen to this one since you're not in it. Fuck that. It's in the show.
I'm sure he'll cut out all my good, my proper points of just leaving his bullshit.
You mean the part where Brian agreed with me and I mentioned all
Brian
the facts?
Agreeing with you don't mean shit. I will. You sweetie pies, take it easy tonight.
All right, we'll get it up tonight.
I'll get it up every night. Yeah, I gotta watch some more Avengers Born. Later.
Which is normally is cool.
The Wolverine one?
Or? Yeah, but I only did it because my wife, she was leaving town, she wouldn't be able to see it. And that was like her most anticipated movie of the year.
Shit, man, I would have taken her.
Because I actually thought it was a discussion about, you know, our favorites, and then we went into the bottom three, so I made a pretty fucking extensive list. I would not read them all, of course.
Right.
But, you know, are what we going to have any for, discussion? Or is
what
just
you're known for
like
is your restraint.
Did I just hear Twiggy?
Fuck yeah, that's my every time you send me a text, baby.
Is it?
Yep. Thank God. You know how many times I fucking have that go off and no one knows what that is.
Fuck those people.
Thank
At least that's
God.
Real sci-fi.
Thank you. Oh, jeez.